This is the Horse Radio Network.
Coming soon to Ocala, Florida, horse capital of the world. A luxurious destination that will redefine equestrian sports in the United States of America. Where passion, potential, and prestige come together in the pursuit of excellence. World Equestrian Center. Quality, class, distinction. Ocala, 2021.
This is the Plaidcast. I'm Piper Clem, publisher of the Plaid Horse Magazine.
And I'm Sissy Wicks, co-host of the Plaidcast.
And coming up on today's show, we have Balmoral Farm, Tracy and Carlton Brooks.
The Plaid Horse Magazine presents the Plaidcast, the leading weekly podcast for hunter jumpers everywhere.
Hi, Sissy.
Hi, Piper. How are you?
I'm good. Where are you joining us from?
I'm still in Wellington, Florida. Are you surviving the shutdown?
I don't know why we ask anymore.
Of course we're in the same place.
We have not moved.
We're following all the rules. Well, not all the rules, but most of the rules. I think you're following all the rules.
Yep. So what has been the worst thing you have snacked on that you normally wouldn't, but you have to because it's a quarantine?
It's gonna sound so lame, but there are these products called Hippies. So it's a soy product, and they're kind of like Cheetos, but they're not. But I'm sure they're very crunchy. So that's the processed food that I've been eating. I know that sounds lame, Piper. I know you were hoping for something better, but I don't eat a whole lot of garbage, I must say. How about you? I'm going to throw that right back at you.
I indulged in a box of Captain Crunch.
An entire box, like a big box?
No, like a regular size box, and not in one sitting, but a box was purchased in my home and shared with my husband. And I don't think I've really had it since college, but it stands the test of time. It's extremely sugary and delicious.
That is very funny. I haven't done that that aisle in a while. That cereal aisle in a while. That's really funny. Yeah. The good thing about not being able to go to the grocery store at the drop of a hat is that, you know, you buy what you buy and you eat it. And you don't, you know, oh, I got to run out and get X, Y, or Z. So there's a certain, you know, hard stop on shopping. That's for sure.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you that. If I want to find a light at the in the middle of this tunnel, I would like to say at the end of the tunnel, but in the middle of the tunnel, it's the you know, the kind of drawing in of different communities in my life. So seven of my roommates from college we all started an email chain, and we're sort of checking in on each other. I mean, I graduated from college in 1980, so it's not like we've all had a whole lot of interaction. Everybody's all over the country. But, you know, we're all checking in on what we're doing and our kids are doing and how everybody is. And we have a bicycle group, a cycling group that meets at 5 o'clock at night here in Wellington. We all wear masks and we stay 6 feet apart. And it's Sandy Farrell and Lynn Jane and Michelle Price and, you know, various women that are down here in the horse business. Nobody's seeing each other, and we're so used to bumping into each other at the ring or at the store or at, you know, dinner or whatever it is. So we're meeting and going for a bike ride, Michelle Masso, a bike ride for an hour and sort of talking over our shoulders. And the next generation of my family have all started a text change in their exchange and they're, you know, bantering back and forth. So it's, you know, I guess everybody has time to reach out and everybody's wanting to have some, you know, humans want to interact and have some kind of relationship and touch with the outside world. So this is the way people are doing it. It's kind of interesting.
I've mostly been sending Tiger King memes, I'm not going to lie.
Oh my God, I cannot watch that. Did you watch that?
Yes.
Oh my God, I can't. I can't watch the animal abuse. It makes me just weep.
Yeah. No, it's special.
And the people are just gross, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. But it's entertaining. So.
Well, it's run number one on Netflix for how many weeks now? So
yeah.
You're in the majority, I'm in the minority, but I can't.
I mean, it's a train wreck. Like, it's, you know, just like you can't stop looking at it. Ugh. And there's so much footage because you just sit there and you're like, and then what? And they just keep giving you more footage. It's awful, but, you know, it's,
I wonder, puts
our community into perspective. Mm, we're really upstanding people.
I wonder if that would have hit so hard if this hadn't happened, if people weren't entertaining themselves hour after hour on Netflix.
It's pretty addictive. Like, I'm not like staying up late watching TV, and I stayed up to like keep watching this and be like, and then what?
Oh my God, I can't even. Yeah, I mean, it's a good thing that we have the streaming services that we have now. I mean, it's, you know, there are some bright spots in all this darkness, and there's a lot of television to be watched, a lot of books to be read that we can now read without having to go to the store, and a lot of old people in your past or present to catch up with. So I hope everybody's reaching out to somebody here.
Absolutely. And even just chatting and spending the time to think. And, you know, I thought, you know, Adam Menger was talking about at college having the time to think about things as opposed to just the show going and going and going. And I thought that was such a good point that, like, we all have time to think instead of, you know, being on the next plane to the next horse show and trying to not miss a thing. We have, like, the opposite of FOMO right now. So
yeah,
hopefully we're all taking advantage.
You know, I think I find it really fascinating to see the different levels of reaction to this situation. Some of my friends and my kids' friends are fairly nonchalant about it and not anxious or stressed. And then others in both of those age groups are incredibly anxious, and their level of stress is off the charts, and their level of their feeling of isolation is off the charts. So it's really a very discrepant reaction. Have you found that with your group, Piper?
Absolutely. And I've always found, I mean, loneliness takes so many forms, and it's something I don't think we take very seriously. And I think that we all, you know, we kind of all joke about the horse show hangover, but I think that we all have so many friends and acquaintances and so much fun at the horse shows. That's why we've made this our lives and our careers, and all we want to do is horse show. But that kind of, when you go home and it's, you're by yourself at home or with, you know, maybe not many people, like it's kind of a cliff regardless of the situation. And then to not know when you're going to horse show again, I think loneliness is very real, and it's really especially real in our sport. And I think a lot of people feel really lonely without their horse, and a lot of people are stuck home without their horse right now. You know, I hadn't really had the opportunity to spend much time with my horse until this winter, because I saw him for a few days here and there, but not like regularly. And I got to spend every day with him for 5 weeks, almost 6 weeks, and it was amazing, and it was so much fun, and he became just such part of my soul every day. And to come home and be like, you know, feel that ripped away, even though I'm here with my husband, you know, I still felt this like hole, you know.
No offense, Adam.
No offense, Adam, but I was like, where's my horse? He loves me so much.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was because I have not left my house since I came back from thermal. So I like literally went from being away for 8 weeks and then straight to here straight. So it was kind of just like very abrupt for me to be going, and then, you know, very much home. So.
And I have felt for my entire life that no matter what was going on in my personal life or my family life, I could walk into the barn and close the doors, and it all stayed outside. And I think so many people have that experience of being at the barn and being able to just shut the rest of the world out, you know, far from the madding crowd. And that is absent, you know, at that part for so many people is not there anymore. So if you're worried about somebody, call them, email them, text them, just check in with people, because there are a lot of people that are becoming unmoored, more and more unmoored as this shutdown continues.
Yep. And, you know, a lot of people are scared about so many things. And, you know, if you can make them feel heard and appreciated and like people care, I mean, you know, I think we talk a lot about mental health at the Plaid Horse. We have a lot of articles. We discuss it a lot. And, you know, I think it's time that everyone take an extra keen eye looking at the mental health of other people. And I think what you're talking about, Sissy, with all these text chains and checking in on people, I mean, that's making it, it's fun. It's fun to talk to your friends and check up on them and hang out with them virtually. But also it's taking an extra step to be a little keener on making sure everyone's mental health stays in a good spot.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Reach out somehow. It's still hard even in 2020 for people to admit that they're struggling. And the thing that really keeps me up at night is just worrying about all of our, what they call bit workers. So all of our gig workers, the day laborers that are out of work. You know, there's so many in our business and they work hard and feed their families and some send money elsewhere, you know, to other countries to feed families there. And those guys are out of work, guys and girls. And that's really what worries me. And along those lines, I'm going to give another plug to a food drive that Michelle Masso and I are doing for the Palm Beach County Food Bank. So if you'd like to participate, and boy, I would love you to participate. Just look at my Facebook page and it gives you some ideas of how to donate to this food bank that's servicing a lot of these day workers.
So to transition in today's episode, today we have on Tracy and Carlton Brooks, which is really exciting because they're who I ride with.
Very exciting. Icons, pillars in the sport too.
Absolutely. And it's always a little more, I don't know, I would say I'm anxious. It's more stressful.
Wait, they're coming onto your territory. You're usually on their territory. This is your playing field. You're the home team advantage here.
But yeah, no, it's always like it feels extra, extra special, extra like extra pressure in a good way. So I'm really excited about that, and it's been such a great opportunity for me riding with them for the last, I think it's 5 years now, which is crazy to think about. So it's this winter they took my horse Ruben to Thermal, and we had a really great horse show. Unfortunately, I think we were finally ready to kill it the last week when all the rain came and then everybody got sent home. But it was really such an incredible experience to watch my
horse. Some people got sent home from the ring sooner than others, Piper. You stayed at the ring demanding the flat class.
I wanted the flat class to happen, okay?
Everybody else was soaked and back at the barn, but you were.
I was like, I'm sure the rain's going to stop and I'll be able to undersaddle.
You were a soldier. You still are a soldier.
I held out hope for like an extra hour.
Your horse will forgive you someday.
Oh, he doesn't care. He loves the mud and being filthy. That's why he fits right in. It was really cool, and I'm so honored and humbled to be a part of their barn and getting to watch the horsemanship and watching how they do things. And you know, I think it's, you know, it's always really impressive when someone takes a horse that they picked out for you and makes it a winner, and does a really good job with it, but this is not a horse that they picked out for me. It's a horse I showed up with, and watching someone kind of with that handicap still make him a winner and make it go really well and make him a better horse and a stronger horse and a more confident horse over the circuit. I think that's something that is just so incredibly difficult, and I appreciate the skill and the precision and, you know, the pressure that comes from teaching someone who's truly afraid. I think a lot of pressure, you know, because when someone's truly afraid, like I am riding and showing, like any one instance can derail things so much. And I think it's a lot of pressure on teaching to not let anything ever get derailed to the best of your ability.
It is. I can attest to that. It absolutely is. And they take their program and their teaching and their approach to each student and each horse very, very personally and very deliberately. And I think that's what sets them apart. That and some really innate skill.
And they're also a lot of fun. I find both of them to have a great sense of humor, and especially again when I'm super nervous at the in-gate or wherever, there's a lot of laughing and there's a lot of enjoying what we're all doing, even if it's not, even if it doesn't really come naturally to me. I just, it's fun, and my horse had fun at Thermal, and I think that's a really cool thing, because I think an unfortunate truth in today's world is not as many horses have fun horse showing as we hope they would.
Yeah, it's a grind. I mean, it's an industry. It's a business. They're part of it. So yeah, the fun factor, that's a huge one. And that's good for both sides, right? Or actually all three sides, the horse, the rider, and the trainer. Because if we're not all having fun, what the heck are we doing here? I think that's the bottom line.
For sure. For sure. We'll take a quick break here, and then we will come back with Tracy and Carlton Brooks.
Since 1975, Finish Line Horse Products has been committed to manufacturing the highest quality horse healthcare products. By fusing years of horseman experience and R&D and the most advanced ingredients, Finish Line Horse Products' superior line of horse products will leave your horses happier and healthier, so you can say, your horse deserves it.
Hi, this is Dr. Marty Adams, equine nutritionist for the Legends Horse Feed line. I've been thrilled to observe the results Legends GastroCare supplement has produced for our customers' horses. This is the only supplement in the Legends line designed to support healthy digestive tract function in show and performance horses. This top dress supplement assists with lessening the digestive challenges brought on by rigorous training schedules, showing or racing, and traveling. Until May 31st, save $5 on a bag of Legends GastroCare supplement. To print your coupon, visit www.legendshorsefeed.com.
Hello, Plaidcast listeners. This summer, join me, Professor Clem, for 3 online college courses at St. Lawrence University, covering topics in equestrian coaching, equestrian business, and equestrian history. I received my PhD in chemistry from the University of California, Berkeley in 2012 and became publisher of the Plaid Horse in 2014. Since 2018, I have taught courses at St. Lawrence University, a small liberal arts college in Canton, New York. For more information, visit theplaidhorse.com/college. That's theplaidhorse.com/college. Or email me at pclem@stlawu.edu. That's pclem@stlawu.edu. I'll see you at the ring.
Our guests on today's Plaidcast, I'm happy to welcome Tracy and Carlton Brooks of Balmoral Farm. Tracy and Carlton have a lifetime of experience with horses, an extensive teaching and training background, and a keen ability to match horses and riders and produce results. Together, they have trained horses and riders to numerous championships at shows such as the Pennsylvania National Horse Show, the Washington International Horse Show, the National Horse Show,
Devon, Junior Hunter Finals, and International Derby Finals. So welcome, Tracy and Carlton.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Glad you're here. So here we are in the middle of the shutdown. Tell us how you guys are keeping sane and what your routines are like right now.
Tracy, would you like to answer that?
Sure. Well, it's a little crazy for everyone, I think. And it's such a new thing that there was no way to know what the right thing was to do for anyone. So in the beginning, we just sort of muddled our way through like everyone else. And then once the protocol came into place, the mandate, the state of California basically said that any non-essential business had to shut down. So that's pretty much what we did. So now we just have essential staff and we're doing what's best for the horses and making sure all the horses get out. And we're trying to kind of keep it to the minimum while still being productive. So it's just every day is sort of a new day.
So Balmoral has two locations, one's in Los Angeles, one's in Malibu. Tracy, can you explain to us how those locations are set up in one of the most densely packed and expensive areas of the country?
Yes, for sure. We have somewhat of a routine. The first location is in Brentwood on the west side of LA. So we call that sort of our city location. And the second one is in Malibu, which is more of a traditional farm location. In Brentwood, everything is very tight quarters. And we kind of say it reminds us of almost being at the Washington International Horse Show all the time. Down the street, the horse. Yes. The horses, it's amazing though how well they adapt. It's amazing. And we do have some turnout there, a little turnout, and the horses do really well. And for horses that don't have a lot of show experience, it's actually really good for them because then they get to the horse show and nothing fazes them. And the nice thing is we call it the taxi that goes back and forth, and the horses can go to both places and get all the benefits of both. So that's really great. Malibu has a lot of turnout. It has a lot of hills, trails. So we kind of have all the bases covered between both places. The Brentwood location is super convenient for our clients. But Malibu also has its own benefits. So we're really fortunate with both.
That sounds incredible. So how much staff are you managing right now while things are kind of on hold?
Minimal. I mean, we've kept all of our staff on, but we're trying to sort of rotate people so we don't have too many people together all at once.
Yes.
While still keeping the schedule really normal for the horses.
Yeah, it's a challenge.
It's a lot. And I mean, the only difference as far as the horses are concerned is they haven't gotten to see their owners very much, but everything else is still the same.
Isn't that great? Yeah, good for you guys. So Carlton, I've been burning to ask you this question, and I was hoping to interview you after Thermal, but we all got rained on and went home. So, you know, you and I are of the same generation, certainly, and we rode against each other years ago, and I am so impressed and fascinated by the fact that you are back in the ring with a number tied on your back. So tell me a little bit about why you decided to start riding competitively again and what that journey has been like.
I started to ride competitively again because I was the only one to do it at Harrisburg and actually at indoors. And I just kind of went with it and remembered what it was like. What was that, 15 years ago? And I did it again, and it worked out. And if you believe in your technique and your system, that part was easy. The physical part of riding, actually, I ride a lot anyways, but not under the pressure and stress. So that was okay. I have a really good team. The team at indoors was the top, and we managed it through. And then when I got home, our rider of 4 years decided to go off and have a life. And I went, guess I'm going to do it again. So instead of I decided to embrace the journey and knew that I knew how to create and produce. So I said, I'm going to go with it. And if it's embarrassing, I'll hire someone else. And if it works out, we'll rock and roll for a while.
Well, I remember. Yeah, I remember I was judging at Capital Challenge. And I looked into the ring and there you were modeling the confirmation horse. And I thought, oh my God, he's got riding clothes on. And I was amazed. And then, so you were good at Capital Challenge, but then you were great at Harrisburg and you ended up being champion at Harrisburg, right?
Right. Yes.
And so that was 2019. So when was the last time you were champion at Harrisburg prior to 2019?
Yeah, 2001. You're right. 2001 or two.
So yeah. Your fitness routine,
I'm
sorry.
A few years ago.
Yeah, I think I was there. Absolutely. So I'm just fascinated by this. So your fitness routine and your discipline to come back and do what you've done has to be pretty stringent. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yes. I'm a big believer in discipline and detail. The discipline of the detail, I believe. I guess that's the way I would phrase it. Discipline of the detail. And myself, the team, the horses, and a lot of energy and enthusiasm. People don't realize I'm very energetic. A lot of people don't realize I'm energetic and enthusiastic. I come off very serious and focused, but actually, there's a lot of enthusiasm there.
Yeah, Piper was just saying that you actually make it fun for, which sounds easy, but for amateur riders that are nervous, or junior riders that are nervous, or owners that are intense, shall we say, that's quite a knack, right? That's a knack to make things fun.
Well, thank you. I believe that you should enjoy the journey and enjoy the process. So I always try to work off what someone needs and wants and build them up from there.
But I think it's such a drive thing. I mean, every time I talk with you, I find myself, you know, the next day setting my alarm for half an hour earlier. I mean, I just, what you were saying about the detail, I think it's so easy to skip things here and there when, you know, there's so much going on and there's things are happening so fast. And I think right now, especially, is a time to really just look place by place of the details. I mean, so tell us a little bit about, Tracy, tell us a little bit about what you're doing with your clients who can't come to the barn and are observing protocols and sheltering in place properly. How are you keeping them kind of focused on the next step?
Well, we are actually doing Zoom riding lessons, sort of classroom sessions. And those have been really fun and really interesting. And I think this whole sheltering in place has made us look elsewhere. And we're trying to look at the bright side and sort of embrace the positive side of it and see what other things we can do. So we've been doing Zoom sessions with the kids. We're going to break it. We did a whole group session recently, and we decided we thought it would be better to break it into kids and adults. So that's what we're doing now. We're doing a Zoom session for the parents too, so that now that we have time and we can spend this time answering questions, we're going to make it fun. Everyone's going to grab their wine and the parents ask us questions and we talk about everything from their child's anxiety to what to expect at the horse show or anything in between. So, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. So we're just trying different things. We have kids sending us videos. We're critiquing their videos together with them, horse show videos. And we're trying to focus a little bit on the horsemanship part of it. So we're giving the kids homework, horsemanship stuff. We've been using the USHJA study guide a lot, and we're creating contests for the kids with prizes that are donated by Pony Suds and Valencia Saddlery. So that's been fun for them too. We're trying to sort of just flip the script and make it something fun and positive for everyone.
For sure. And I have to share with everyone, also, like, I went out for a hand graze with four of your short stirrup kids during thermal, and we started playing horsemanship games. Like, I would do quiz questions, and they were so fast and so correct, and it completely blew my mind. Like, I was out there with another adult, Rennie Dieball, and we were like, oh my God, like, we have to think of even harder questions, because they were so excited to share their knowledge. They knew the confirmation, they knew, you know, things that I didn't. You know, it's so easy for adults to be like, kids don't know anything nowadays. And I think I kind of, you know, didn't expect them to have the knowledge that they had. And it was really cool to see.
Thank you. We're really proud of them.
Tracy, I want to talk to you for a little bit. So again, I've known Carlton forever, but I don't know a lot about your background and what your upcoming was with horses and that kind of thing. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, and I was horse crazy from a young age. My parents were not horse people. And I just started taking riding lessons. And at that time it was, right now it's the Bass's Maypine Farm.
Ah,
and
yes.
That's where I started. Yeah. And, Lutz Andahasy was there at the time, Lutz and his dad, Laddie. And I started with them and just sort of fumbled my way through. And my parents were super supportive, and they would drop me off on the weekends in the morning and pick me up in the afternoon, and I couldn't get enough. And then it just kind of kept going from there.
And you rode as a junior and kept going?
I did. I didn't have a lot of financial backing, so I just did what I could. And rode as a junior. I did a lot of catch riding as a junior for, I don't know if you remember, Dorchester Farms in Ohio.
Yeah.
Joe and Peg Leffeholtz were there at the time. And I have a December birthday, so I took a year off when I graduated from high school. And I was kind of a working student for them and got to show as a junior with them. And that was really fun. And then after my junior years, I went to work for Cindy Foster. And rode and showed horses for her and took horses to horse shows for her. She had a young family at the time. And so I would take horses to horse show by myself. And I was the groom and the braider and the rider. So I would clean the stalls in the morning, braid the horses, show them, you know, in the beginning of the week and get them ready for the kids. And then the kids would come and I would train them. And it was the best on the job experience. It was amazing that she trusted me with all those people. I was probably, I don't know, 19 or 20 years old.
Wow.
So that was great learning. And then from there, I had my own business in Ohio at Hugh Kincannon's at Ridgewood. And that was also terrific. And Hugh was around there more at the time. It was before he was managing so many horse shows. And so he was super helpful. And then I moved to California, and the rest is history.
The rest is history. Well, I know from my own experience that working with your husband can be challenging, shall we say. And
that's a nice way to put it.
Yeah, exactly. So I assume you guys have sort of a yin and yang and different roles. And how do you navigate being civil and nice to each other and keeping your marriage in one piece and working together?
She keeps me on the road.
Yeah. Well, it's nice having the two facilities. I will say that. So I'm basically at the LA facility and Carlton is at the Malibu facility most of the time when we're in town. And the way we split it up is I really do a lot of the teaching and he does a lot of the horses, and then we sort of bring it together in the middle, I think. I also do a lot of the administration, which frees him up to really focus and be able to have like his laser focus on the horses, which is really great. And I think because we trust each other so much, things are always happening so quickly that we don't always get to consult over decisions. So he'll call me and he'll say, I just bought a horse. Or I'll call him and say, oh, there was this horse and I bought it off of a video. And
we really
trust each other. So I think that's the bottom line. And yes, we have our moments for sure, but I think we've learned how to really balance it all. And I think we're a good team because Carlton is so detail oriented and I'm more of a big picture person. So I think it works well that way too.
Yeah, it usually works like that, doesn't it? That there are two sort of different pieces that fit together well. That's great. So Carlton, tell us about Balmoral TV. I think that's fascinating.
Oh my gosh. That was the brainchild of, I guess both of us were always trying to be inventive and creative and find something new. And we, Tracy and I really wanted to find ways to give back. A lot of people sponsor things and do that. And I go, you know, I look back at all the horsemen that helped me get started. And Tracy was talking about Laddie and Hazy and everybody that helped her. And we went, how can we share what we have before it disappears? And we said, oh, TV, YouTube, anybody can watch. So that's how it started. And we're always looking for new ideas and helping whatever people want, if we know how to do it, putting it on there for the public. And Tracy has really been good about keeping everything simple on it. She's great on camera. And we really are wanting to give back to the sport. We want to, what I learned years ago has carried me through. And I think if it disappears, it's going to change the whole industry drastically. So Tracy, do you want to add to that?
Yes. Yes. I think one of our main goals besides giving back was making things accessible and relatable to people at all levels, at all socioeconomic levels as well. And giving exercises that anyone can do, whether you show, you don't show, your horse is young, your horse is old, everything is able to be modified. So also people have asked us, aren't you going to charge for that? And that was the whole point, was that we don't want to charge for it. We have a great sponsor in Taylor Harris, and they've been amazing just letting us do it. So we're going to keep doing it as long as we can. Show Jumping Life does the filming for us. David Portner, he's wonderful. So we just keep going, and people write in and ask us, you know, or just casually when we see them, hey, you should do an episode on this or that. And we're happy to do whatever people want to see.
And Carlton, you were inducted into the National Show Hunter Hall of Fame last year during the Devon Horse Show. And in your induction speech, you thanked the thousands of horses that made you the horseman you are today. And, you know, at the time it was running through my head, thousands of horses, how is that possible? And I started thinking about how many, actually like doing the math, because that's how I think about things. So I was like, how is it thousands? And I started really thinking about how in your career it's thousands, it might even be tens of thousands of horses you've encountered and you've learned from. And I think that that's a big part of Balmoral TV and what it brings. And like you said about losing that knowledge, it's not just a little bit, it's a scale that most people, like, I can't even conceptualize that kind of scale of how many horses both of you have encountered and learned from, and what that brings to learning. Can you, Carlton, talk about a couple of the horses that really stood out over the years?
Sure. Number one, I would like to say that it's 10,000 hours to become an expert of anything, even to be knowledgeable in any field you do it. You know, that's an old standard saying. You have to put 10,000 hours in to be ready to know anything. Horses, I try to learn by every horse. I'm standing at the schooling ring of a horse show, and I watch every horse walk by, and I try to learn something from that horse. It might walk by on a Tuesday. I see it go on a Wednesday. I watch it on Thursday. Well, wow, that horse did that and that and that day. I wonder what else they did. And I'm always open to trying to figure that out. The horses I've learned from, I had a horse that my father bought me. Well, the first horse I had was going to the Killers, and I learned a lot about that because we didn't know anything. So it was learn as you go. They bought me a horse for $100 that I took to the Leaky Roof Circuit and showed in the preliminary and open jumpers as a 12-year-old. And I did a lot of odd things and made a lot of mistakes. But, you know, back then when you were struggling to do anything, you tried not to ever make that mistake again. So that was good. His name was I'll Think About It, because every time I asked my mother a question, she would say, I'll think about it. So I named the horse after that. And then they bought me a horse that had been state champion. It was a stopper, a bad, bad stopper. And you really had to understand him to win. And everybody said, if anybody can do it, you can. Of course, now I'm 14 or 13, and I did it. So those three, that horse's name was Dark Shadows from the TV show back then. And then moving ahead quickly, a lot of years, I worked for Butch and Lou Thomas, and I learned a lot. Butch had a lot of horses that weren't the easiest. And through patience and common sense, we figured out a lot of them. He got a couple horses that other people couldn't make work, and Butch had stopped riding at the time. So I was the one throwing the leg over him, and pretty much I had to, Butch was busy with other things, and I had to figure him out. And so I spent a lot of time on him. My first Grand Prix horse's name was Outrageous. He's the one that taught me you don't need to jump a jump before you go in the Grand Prix, because he was a little flighty in the head and cantering for half an hour one direction in a tight circle and a half an hour the other direction, and then that was it. And you get on him for the Grand Prix and you literally walk into the ring. And the first jumps back then were like 5-3. So that was a trick I learned for the hunters. One of the most I've learned from with the horsemen, but I didn't know Buck Brannaman, Tom Dorrance at the time, was a horse named Sparring Partner. He was a client of ours, Kentucky Derby prospect. He came from Monty Roberts. And Monty Roberts, the horse didn't want to run, so I got him, and my owner made me a bet if I could ever make him champion at an A horse show. Well, of course, I took that challenge in a heartbeat. And I realized that I had to mimic the horse. He would shake his head up and down at night, bored over the stall screen or through the stall screen. So I'd be on the wall phone back there for people who know what a wall phone is. And I started shaking my head with him, and he followed me. And then I would slow it down, and he would slow his head down. And then I'd shake my head left, and then I'd shake my head right, and he started mimicking me. So I knew then I needed to become the horse and then get the horse to think try to create the idea of what we wanted the horse to do, but it always had to be the horse's idea. So that was a philosophy I have had ingrained with me since then. One other, a horse named Penn Square, and a lady had been a client of mine previously, and she came to me and said, if anybody can do this horse, it's you. Have at it. And I had to figure out, he was a bull. He would, if you went to turn him out in the paddock, he'd try to pull you off your feet as you turned him loose. Flighty, you couldn't get on him. I had read books. Rodney Jenkins mounted a horse as it was moving. I found different ways to do things. I found ways to get on that horse so that the horse didn't think he could flee. Or I made trail obstacles in front of him. He wanted to run away. He had to step through tires and over a pole and a wooden bridge. Go between a maze of jumps I put up 4-5 feet apart, angled left and right. And he tried to run through them, and I'd run into the standards. But he learned never to run away. But he could still get away. And those things, those horses were the foundation, I think, for my future.
Tell us some of the famous ones you had, because I remember.
Tracy, I'm going to need some help here.
Vested, Corporate Profit, Trinity,
Vested,
Center
Vested
Stage.
Won everything out there, and then came east and kicked butt on the East Coast, too, as I recall. That was really a great working hunter.
Yep. And it just goes to show you that there was another great horse that had a history of someone that didn't take the time with him, and you had to win him over, and then he would do anything for you. But there was another horse that didn't like the schooling ring, so he just didn't jump in it.
Yeah, you did a great job with him.
Thank you.
All right, let's take a let's take a break and hear from a few of our sponsors, and we'll be right back with Tracy and Carlton. What you put into your body has a big impact on what you see on the outside. That's why at Springtime Supplements, we pride ourselves on offering quality products with natural ingredients that work. For over 40 years, Springtime Supplements has been offering natural supplements for horses, dogs, and people. From joint health and equine omegas to natural instinct repellent, we've got you covered. In addition to great products at great prices, Springtime offers great buy one, get one bundle that makes it easier to stock up and save on products that you love. And for a limited time, Springtime is free shipping on all orders. So hurry to take advantage of these great offers. Please go to springtime.com/plaid. That's springtime.com/plaid. Or call us at 800-521-3212. So you too can experience the springtime difference.
Don't you love opening your mailbox and seeing something in there you actually want? Something in there that isn't a bill, political mail, or a donation request? Something you want. Subscribe to the Plaid Horse Magazine, and we'll deliver that feeling 9 times a year. That's right, you can subscribe to the Plaid Horse Magazine. That way you'll never miss an issue. Sign up at theplaidhorse.com.
So we're back with Tracy and Carlton Brooks at Balmoral Farm. So before I knew you guys and rode with you guys, it's very easy at the horse show to tell which horse trains at Balmoral because they're usually wearing, if they're not showing, a big fluffy square saddle pad and a string girth. And can you, Carlton, can you tell us a little bit about what my marketing brain calls Balmoral iconography, but you would say is all purposeful and detail oriented and a reaction of listening to your horses?
So the saddle pad was back in the days. No saddle fits ideally on any horse. And the saddle pad there has a very big cushion in it. What is amazing is most saddles, when someone puts them on, the saddle slides forward and the pad slides backwards. So that pad was made so there's more padding out in front of the saddle. It's a rectangular pad. The ones we have are custom made for us. And now the pad for the Balmoral Butte that we designed for Butte fits perfectly with that pad for everyday use. The pad doesn't move just like the saddle at all. When you sit, push your right hip in, everything lays flat and flush. Same with you go to the left. So that's the key of the pad. The string girth, I was sitting with the famous leather maker one day, Jimmy Weeby. And Sissy, you know, when we grew up in hunting and appointments classes, we had a threefold girth with no elastic.
Yes, we did.
Remember those?
Yes, I do.
And so when you had a big old horse that bloated or was too fat for our girth, because basically the standard size of girth back then was 44 or 46, you struggled to get that girth on. So I was sitting with Jimmy Weeby, and he mentioned that we were talking about that. He said, well, I'm the one that designed that elastic. And I said, well, Jimmy, that elastic seems to stretch too much and this girth still moves. He goes, well, the elastic was originally only supposed to be 2 inches long on both sides. And I said, well, these girths, they're all nowadays, these girths you're selling us, they sit between the ribs. And he goes, I said, why don't we make a girth like we used to have, the threefold girth, because that's like a belt and it sat on two ribs. And when the girth and saddle moved a little bit, you were still always having a firm, secure thing on the ribs. So Jimmy designed the wider girth. And then from there, I went, what can we do to help this horse expand and contract? Because as a horse jumps the jump, as a horse goes to crouch in front of a jump, they actually expand their rib cage expands. So with the string girth, we put the string girth on because it actually helps, allows the horse to expand, but doesn't loosen and then stays secure as you jump the jump and expands again as the horse lands. That's the purpose of the string girth. Tracy?
Yes, and a lot of all of the testing going on now and all the experimenting on ulcers and performance horses having ulcers, we find that any horse that has a tendency towards that is happier in the string girth as well.
Yeah, I've had the same experience. I find horses that are, you know, what we call girthy or reluctant to kind of relax through their rib cage and their back really do well with those soft girths. So, but you actually showing them, that's great.
Sure, it was one of the original girths.
Yeah, it was one of the original girths. Yeah, absolutely.
So Tracy, tell us a little bit more about the Balmoral Butte. So you guys have used Butes for years, but there were still upgrades that you felt the saddle needed, and so you worked with saddle makers there to design your own version, the Balmoral Butte, that anyone can purchase. Can you tell us a little bit more about what design functions went into that?
Yes. Butte was generous enough to indulge us and let us have some prototypes and play around with it. So we went through a few different incarnations of it. And basically what we were trying to do was meld the old school traditional flat close contact saddles into the newer saddles that are more comfortable and more comfortable, I should say, for the rider because they provide more cushion. But maybe they weren't as comfortable for the horse. So we were trying to sort of create the best of all the worlds. So what we did was we made some adjustments to the tree and the padding, and we tried to distribute the weight of the saddle and the rider more across the horse's whole back so that the saddle doesn't pinch. We changed the center of balance of the rider a little bit, and the seat is flat. We sort of moved the center of balance back a little bit. And we just played around, and it was sort of trial and error. And now I think we're really happy with it. And a lot of professionals have ridden in it and have come to us and said, oh, I just ordered six. So it's been really fun. And everyone who sits in it immediately says, I love this saddle. So it's been really rewarding, and the horses seem to love it. They jump great in it, and the riders love it too. So it's been a fun project.
Yeah, it really put my leg into the right spot in a way that I haven't felt when I sat in it, which was interesting because I'm kind of skeptical on everything. And you said, oh, it'll put your leg right in the right spot. And I was like, okay, sure. But I got on it. I was like, oh, crap, I can't put my leg where I want to, which is the wrong spot.
There you go. Yeah, it's good. And everyone seems to like it, and everyone, even people with different styles of riding. So that's been a fun experiment too, just giving it to a few different people to play with.
For sure. So switching gears a little bit, one of the biggest things that I've really appreciated about both of you is how inclusive you are. I think that the sport needs great ambassadors for the sport, and before I even really knew both of you very well, you know, I would see you at Devon talking to fans of the sport, you know, non-horse people, inviting them back to meet your horses. And then as I've gotten to know both of you better, I just see it so much more up close that it's always, Balmoral is so welcoming, and I've always been so welcomed. And can you talk a little bit about Tracy first and then Carlton about that kind of ethos, and you know, it matches how we feel at the Plaid Horse, and that's part of why I'm so honored to get to spend time with you. Aside from everything else, it's this we all belong here, we all belong at the horse show, and we all belong riding together and treating each other well.
Yes, for sure. And we just go back to why do we all do this? We love horses, we love being at horse shows, and we want to encourage anyone who has that love. And so we just try to embrace that. And we try to make the barn a very friendly place, family atmosphere. And we want people to love it as much as we do. And anyone who has a thirst for knowledge, and we're happy to answer questions. We will stop what we're doing to, you know, if someone comes up to us and asks us anything, a confirmation question, a horse question, a client question, we have to embrace it because it's good for everyone. And there were people this year, an example, there were people at Thermal, this older couple walked past me and we were busy running around how we always do. And they stopped me and I could tell they were new at the horse show. And they said, do you know where we're supposed to go to watch the big class? And I assume they meant the Grand Prix. And I was zipping off to a ring in my golf cart. And so I pointed, I said, it's over there. And if you just walk that way, you'll run into it. And I started driving off and I was like, you know what? No. So I turned around and I went back to them and I thought, okay, if these were my parents, this is how I would want someone to treat them. And I turned around and I went to them and I said, you know what, get in and I'll give you a ride. And I took them up there and I took them into the VIP and I sat them at our table and told them to have lunch. And we need to do that. I mean, for people who love the sport, for people who are new to the sport, that's what it's about. I think it's a community and we have to just keep remembering that. And especially for younger people who were trying to train and teach and they're coming up, and we have to give back what people gave to us. And that's just sort of our philosophy.
I think that's so true with the younger element too. I mean, so many people ask me, and I'm sure ask you guys twice as often, how do I make my way? You know, how do I get to where I want to go? I have limited opportunity or limited funding, and I'm hungry and I want a career in this business. And if we can all just reach out and, I mean, give people, you don't have to give them a job necessarily, but give them advice and support. And it really makes a difference to be inclusive because there are so many barriers to this sport. And we're talking about sport growth all the time. So I think you're right. I think inclusion on every single level is so important. Obviously,
yeah,
you concur,
also
Tracy.
And just people having the courage to ask. It takes a lot to walk up to someone you might not know even and ask a question. And we give people so much credit for that. And we have so much respect for that, that we're happy to answer those people. For sure.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and I'll say, you're not going to judge any of their questions because I'll be the first to say I've asked you guys a million stupid questions.
But there is no stupid question.
And
no question is a stupid question.
Yep. If you don't understand, it's worth it that we all talk to each other and we all experience it because, you know, that's how you learn. And if you don't know something, it's there are people around that want to answer your questions.
Definitely. And also sometimes we say to ourselves, if people don't understand, we need to do a better job explaining it.
Right. So let's switch.
That's kind of why we have the parents class.
Yeah. Let's switch gears a little bit, Carl, and talk about judging, which is something that you and I share. Tell me what you think the state of horse show judging is at right now, and where you think we're going as judges. There's a lot of, I don't know, controversy and change in the air. So, what are you looking at?
Well, I don't know where to start, but the word you just mentioned, controversy, is something that has to be broached quickly for the hunter sport. You can score a horse, or you can judge a horse. And, you know, my old saying is, if you score it, you're finding the negatives in every performance. If you judge a horse, you find the attributes of that horse. People are great at bashing because it's a subjective sport. I know ice skating is going up against the same thing. But if you look at it as an artistic thing, I think it's a little different. I feel it's a little different. And we have to be positive as trainers, you and I at the back gate. We can never say anything negative. We can say, I didn't see what they saw, because we probably didn't, but I don't bash a judge, no judge. I know what it's like to be up there. And yes, we miss things. I hate to admit it. We get pushed to be in a hurry. And sometimes, as you know, when you have a few moments, you go back and check your card. And lots of times we change things. sixth and fifth, eighth and sixth. And those make a difference. And I think we need to be allowed, even with scores, to be able to change our score. That's going to open a can of worms. But when you are forced to give a number, you start to cram up your numbers. And when you get time to go back and look at your card, oh, that really should be above that horse. So I think we need to change the numerical system, because everybody wants numbers so they know where they stand. But I think we need to be able to adjust the numerical system, not change the scores.
Your head is going to explode when I tell you what's, you know, in the offing, and that is the idea of numerical scoring to the point of each jump having a numerical value. Judges judging on iPads and having live scoring a la dressage. And it makes me just, you know, I just cannot imagine having each jump as a certain quantity. And so therefore you have that, you take out, you know, as you say, the performance aspect, a lot of the subjectivity, which I think is opinion and expertise. And, you know, you like a certain style and I like a certain style, and a horse will win 1 week with the same trip with me and not win with you because, you know, you think he jumps too flat or whatever it is. But,
oh, right.
And I think that's part of the game, and it certainly has been part of the game for the 100 years you and I have been doing it. But that's, you know, because of the controversy and because of people complaining about judging, you know, ad nauseum, I'm afraid that that's where this train is leading, to that kind of, you know, extensive numerical value.
See, I don't know if this is the appropriate time. So, but if you gave an 81 or above, you gave an 83 or above, and you look back over your card and decided the 81 could be above the 83, you should be able to move it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because the first horse in the ring is, you know, setting a fairly arbitrary, not completely arbitrary, but it's setting a standard, and you're, right, you know, you're judging around that.
Go ahead, Piper.
To me though, I mean, all of this kind of misses the point, is that, you know, I do think that the hunters would be valued from some sort, and I know that a judge doesn't have time to do it in the box in the current system, but some sort of feedback, even if it was a sentence, about a round, which could be positive or negative or however it wants to be framed. But I think walking away not knowing, there's education and knowing where you were pinned in the class, but I think a little bit more could go a long way, and then it wouldn't. I think people want the desire to score every jump comes from a place of not understanding. And if we could increase the understanding still within the confines of the current system, we wouldn't have to do something so drastic.
Piper, I totally agree with you. And we've done, at a couple horse shows, we called a scribe in, which was just an amateur that wasn't competing in the class. And we gave a comment with each round. And for a special class, the National Hunter Derby, the U.S. Hunter Derby, you know, whatever is a special class, the medal class that day. And then we posted all those comments and the cards. The trainers were the ones that went and looked at them. Some trainers, they had closed the office door on them and told them they had to leave. They were reading them. And they appreciated it. And I think that could be encouraged for management of horse shows much more. A judge that is confident in what they're doing and wants to be fair has no problem with the scribe in there and making a comment. We do it for, if you judge Arabian sport horse breeding, you have a scribe. You have a scribe. Scribes are probably a bridge to make people realize it's not unethical what we do in that judge's box. We are not trying to favor anything. It's gotten so blown out of proportion. We walk into every horse show, Sissy, you can back me up here or disagree or whatever, but we walk into every horse show intending to be fair to everyone.
Of course.
We intend to pick the best horses. What we do as judges when we leave that box every day is know that most people, we disappointed them because they didn't win.
Or they don't understand.
We've been in those shoes too. And we know some always won't understand. But they don't want to. That's the issue. We need to make it where they can go and figure it out.
But then we can lead into this really, you know, dangerous territory of, it's easier for a trainer to say, well, the judging stinks, than to say, well, you know what, your horse isn't quite as good a jumper or quite as good a mover, or you don't ride as well as I told you you did, you know, that kind of thing. So blame the judge, you know, tell them the judging stunk and you're off the hook as a trainer. And that's, I think we bear the brunt of a lot of that.
Unfortunately, the clients should need to be educated to realize, no, it's not really that reason. You can blame the judge, but it's really not the judge's fault. You're the one performing. You have no one to blame but look at yourself. And if we had a scribe, just for one idea, and we put that comment up, girl rides great, had tough time out of the left turns. Okay. Well, then I know why I didn't do well. The left turns look different than the right turn. I mean, it's simplistic, usually, why they got placed where they did.
Yeah, I'm also picturing the show management saying, we have to have what now? We have to have scribes in these little tiny booths that we have two judges sitting elbow to elbow in.
But they don't have to have it every class.
Yeah, and I think it would be tremendously educational. But I'm sure there's pushback, but there's pushback for every innovation, but I think it would be tremendously educational.
If you had scribes for something in the children's hunter division, something in the junior hunter division, something in the amateur hunter division, if your horse show offered a derby, have a scribe. You post three or four classes of that, and any exhibitor that goes and reads those comments will realize that we judge consistently. Our comments are similar on each issue that we're looking for. Even if we didn't have a scribe in the class that exhibitor competed in, we've given them the opportunity to go, oh, that one doesn't like the fact that I went backwards to the first jump.
And I do think during the bigger horse shows, you know, that I have more time to watch every horse, it's I can say, oh, that's not my personal preference, but you can see each judge's methodology if you watch a few courses. And I think one of the other biggest problems is almost no one watches. I mean, the thing we have to remind everyone is not a single trainer at the ingate is watching every single round in that division. Not a single exhibitor is watching every single round in that division. Even if you try to watch your division, or your trainer tries to watch your division, they're still warming you up. You're still warming up. You know, the only one who is sitting there watching every single round and putting them against each other from the same vantage point is the judge.
Mm-hmm.
And this whole conversation plays into a broader conversation of why more people aren't becoming judges. Because that's been going around too. Why don't we have more young people wanting to be judges or being able to be judges? It's a thankless job. I don't know how you guys do it.
Sometimes I have that same feeling. Why am I doing this? Yeah, it's it's certainly, I don't think you could make your living doing it. But you know, I find it enjoyable and challenging, and you know, some people do, some people don't. But you're right. And even further yet, why would anyone want to be a steward at this point in time? And we're very low on stewards, certainly younger stewards. But that's another job that, you know, the money is okay, not very good. And the responsibility and the level of responsibility and vitriol that you have to face is daunting to some of those people. I mean, they're in the line of fire a lot.
Absolutely.
I think we're in a time the world's in a realignment right now, I think we need to think that maybe we should speak up a little bit and create a realignment of things like, we have to go get a license for our judges thing. Why don't we have to pass the stewards test too? Why don't we, you know, it's a licensing requirement, but I go through and read the rule book every year. Everything that pertains to us, including the sportsmanship section, all those that are for the general association. I read all those every year. And I'll tell you what, you don't find so much to criticize if you read them all.
Amen.
One of my tests is in the medal classes is a verbal question. Have you ever read your rule book? 95% of those students don't know there is a rule book.
You're kidding me.
That's the trainer's fault. I gave some lessons last week by FaceTime. All we did was go through the rule book with every one of those lessons. Those kids ate it up. They loved it. I post all the equitation tests on the board at the barn. You're up there hacking, waiting for me. Think about practicing one of these tests. The kids read them. You go up there, they're trying to do serpentines. They're trying to do three simple changes across the diagonal. They need refreshment, but it becomes their idea because they read it on the board. They go up there. I get stuck on the phone. I'm 10 minutes late. Those kids are up there working on those tests. Things have gotten too cookie cutter. We need to add more enthusiasm and open our eyes and go back to the basics when we rode all November without stirrups, when we did flat work for 15 days and tried to make it so we could do five things better in those 15 days. I mean, we have to create challenges and make it a game. That's my thought about the judging.
Well, there's a lot of work to be done. And I could talk to you about this for hours and hours, and I hope I get the opportunity to. So, Tracy and Carlton, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for all that you're doing for our sport, in person and virtually, and we want you to stay safe during this pandemic.
Same to you guys. Everybody be safe. Thanks for having us.
Everybody be safe. Thank you.
AIG, a leading insurance organization, is proud to sponsor the Plaidcast. Through its private client group, AIG offers personal insurance solutions for a horse owner's lifestyle. Find out why successful families across the country entrust AIG to protect custom homes and personal farms, equine liability, valuables, luxury vehicles, and more. Learn more at AIGprivateclient.com/equine.
Looking for a good book? Check out Show Strides, the Plaid Horses series of novels about a group of ambitious young riders and their horses and ponies. Suitable for all ages, Show Strides books 1, 2, and 3 are available on Amazon in paperback, for Kindle, and on Audible. Happy reading!
Mane & Tail celebrates 50 years of grooming excellence. Thank you to all of our customers who helped make this possible. Mane & Tail, discover the secret. From the Straight Arrow family of brands, with over 100 years of grooming excellence.
Well, Sissy, that sounded really interesting. And yeah, I mean, I think now's the time to heat up a little bit, maybe getting people excited about having feedback from When They Horse Show. You know, we've kind of been saying it at a slow, dull roar for a few years, but I think people would go wild over feedback and really feel that the money they spent at the horse show is better worth it from one sentence. And when you say it like that, we're kind of irresponsible not to do it.
Well, and I think if people feel that way, rather than griping about it at the in gate, reach out to your board of the USHA, reach out to Mary Babick, just reach out to your zone committee, whatever it is. But if you want that to happen, if you want changes to be enacted or considered, then get involved. That's my best advice.
And here's where I want to give a shout out. Georgie Masquerie Sagesman wanted this to happen, and so she sponsored her equitation, her Whitethorn equitation class, and that was one of the stipulations with her sponsorship. So if you're sponsoring derbies, or you're already sponsoring stuff, or you want to go sponsor stuff, like use the power that you have from supporting our sport and help make it even better. And if you're doing a local derby, I mean, we sponsor a local derby every year, and after this conversation, that's definitely a conversation I'm going to have. Can we have a scribe and comment cards for at least all competitors as part of our sponsorship? I think that's a great way. If 10 sponsors around the country got started on this, we could impact thousands of people right off the bat. So,
absolutely. I think it's a great idea.
So, and who do we know that's on the USHA board of directors to help us with this task? I don't know.
Well, once we try to unravel the shutdown and the pandemic, which we're addressing now, and all of the tangles that have ensued this spring, we'll I think that's a great topic to bring up, and I think the licensed officials committee would be that might be the start. But I will not forget that conversation. I think it's a really great idea.
And I also think, I mean, again, we're going to see, I mean, no decisions have been made, and I know nothing, but I think we're going to see some interesting, as Katie said on last week's podcast, Katie Sezik, some interesting mileage rule discussions. I mean, as horse shows get replaced, it's going to get interesting. And I think actually this is a way that horse shows could differentiate themselves and really build their base and become, if they have to compete within the mileage, how do you be a better horse show? I think giving comment cards would make you a much more competitive horse show if you're dealing with challenges from the mileage rule.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we will break here and be right back. Thank you, Sissy.
Thank you, Piper.
When you see a horse feeder supplement developed by Kentucky Equine Research, you know it's based on over 30 years of science. With nutrition and exercise physiology research facilities in Kentucky and Florida, Kentucky Equine Research investigates innovative supplements, validates unique feed ingredients, and optimizes partner feeds. Look for KER products and learn more at KER.com. Kentucky Equine Research, world leaders in equine nutrition.
Is there a perfect pony for your family and your budget? This is Emily Ellick, and here at Stonewall Farm, we select great ponies for a willing and brave attitude, exceptional canter, and top jumping ability. With over 85 ponies sold released in 2018, we cover all sizes, budgets, divisions, and goals. Sales graduates include Blueberry Hill, Rainbow Canyon, Vermont Ruby Fox, Top That, Pineapple, Stonewall Top Call, Oliver Twist, Stonewall Black Pearl, and many others. Get in touch with me by phone at 920-889-0028, on Facebook at Stonewall Ponies Emily Ellick, or by email at stonewallponies@gmail.com to view the latest selection of at least 40 ponies to choose your perfect match.
You can find links to today's guests and show notes at thepladhorse.com/listen. Please rate and review our show on iTunes. 5-star reviews help people discover the podcast. And if you enjoy our conversation, please share it with your friends. Most people still learn about new things that they like from their friends, from word of mouth, from a text message. And we would love if you would share the podcast with your friends. You can follow the podcast on Facebook, search for The Plaidcast, or The Plaid Horse Magazine as a whole on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest. Anywhere you are, we are there posting content, working hard to make entertaining horse content during this time. So come join us. You can read full issues on theplaidhorse.com. Subscribe to the Plaid Horse Magazine at theplaidhorse.com/subscribe. You can have all the Horse Radio Network shows with you wherever you go using the free Horse Radio Network app for iPhone and Android. Go to your app store and search Horse Radio Network. You can also subscribe via iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify. Anywhere you listen to podcasts, the podcast is there. Thank you to our sponsors, Finish Line, Balmoral TV, Straight Arrow, KER, Legend Horse Feed, AIG, Springtime Supplements, and our presenting sponsor, who we could not do this without, the World Equestrian Center. I will see you at the ring, Sissy.
See you at the ring soon, I hope, Piper.
Hello, I'm Carlton Brooks of Balmoral. I read the blog every day on theplathorse.com. You can also see the latest on social media by following The Plaid Horse on Facebook and The Plaid Horse Mag on Instagram.